Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
All right, everyone, we are back. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri. We are presented by PPV.com. We're coming off of a PPV.com weekend in San Antonio. I'm still trying to digest all the brisket and the Tex-Mex. It was an amazing time. It was an amazing fight night, which culminated in Lamont Roach and Pitbull Cruz fighting to a draw. Everyone that was in the live interactive chat, thank you very much. Everyone that followed us all week long, whether it was the content that I was putting out in San Antonio or the many, many media appearances that Chris Algieri did. He was everywhere last week. It was a very successful week for PPV.com, and we'll have many more next year in 2026. They are our proud presenting sponsor, so thank you to everyone that was with us this week. Chris, how are you, man? It's the day or a couple days after another draw for Lamont Roach.
Yeah, and no, I'm good. The card was good. The fight was good. The main event was good. It was actually better than I expected. I did not expect a draw. But kind of in hindsight, thinking back, you and I were talking offline, and we're kind of like, you know, we both thought Roach won at that time, but we both kind of looked back at it and like, I'm not mad at the draw. Like, it was a very close fight, and even we had Breadman on our live talk for Pro Box, and he was like, hey, I had Roach winning, and he's like, and then I looked at my scorecard and I had it a draw. It was just that kind of fight, you know. He's like, in my head, I had Roach winning, and then I looked at my scorecard and it was a draw. So it's just. I mean, it is what it is.
It was one of those fights, man. It was one of those 7-5. You can make a case for Roach, it's 7-5. Make a case for Pitbull, 7-5. Therefore, a 6-6 draw with dueling point deductions, one for holding and hitting and one for a knockdown. You have yourself a draw. And I was the same way. I thought Roach won the fight. I made a video afterwards that's gotten has made the rounds. I thought Roach won. And then you know what? I took a day. Another day. It's here Monday as we record this, and a draw is very fair. I mean, it was that type of fight. Both fighters can make their case. Both fighters showed their strengths. Both fighters showed their weaknesses in this fight. I thought Pitbull showed in that first 4 or 5 rounds relentless pressure, the type of pressure that would give anybody at 140 fits. And then once Roach figured it out in those middle rounds, middle to late rounds, Pitbull was disarmed. He was a puppy dog. He couldn't figure him out. And the weakness of Roach would be that why didn't he employ the boxing? Why didn't he employ the jab and the movement and the athleticism in those early rounds? I give him a lot of credit for standing and trading. I think the fans will love that. But what does he have to show for it? 2 consecutive draws. He doesn't have the WBA lightweight title, and he doesn't have the 140 WBC interim title. He has 2 draws.
Yeah, he's got a lot of street cred, so he does have that. People were impressed with his performance, you know, which they should be. It was a good fight. Cruz was a beast, and he showed up. And you're right. I mean, it was kind of like the story of 2 fights. Cruz looked like an absolute wrecking ball, and then he just falls off the cliff. His output goes way down. You're the numbers guy. I was really looking forward to doing the show. If you had any numbers to show what I saw. In my own mind, like, this guy just completely fell off at a certain point during the fight, which allowed Roach to then use that jab. You said, oh, why didn't he use the jab early? I don't think he could have. I think Cruz is all over him so efficiently and effectively that Roach really just went to the counter hook as his first priority. But as Cruz slowed down, that's when you saw the disruptive jab come up from Roach. And then from then on, it was a completely different fight.
Yeah, Roach's output round by round. First round, 49. Second round, 55. Third round, 56. Fourth round, 60. Fifth round, 56. Then it started to decline from round 6 on, down to 37, 42, 41, 24 punches thrown in round 10. And then rounds 11 and 12, which really came into focus because, you know, that's when I feel like the fight was really hanging in the balance because I thought it was pretty even heading into the 11th and 12th. In the championship rounds, I don't really like to use that term because all rounds should be scored the same, but they are important rounds because as you score a fight, you know, you got to win those rounds. You have to win at least 7 rounds on a card. And I pulled up the stats for the 11th and 12th round because I'm seeing a lot of different takes out there about what happened in the 11th and 12th round. The 11th and 12th round, they were pretty even in connects landed, both guys. It just was that one guy threw more, a lot more punches. Roach was 30 of 82 in rounds 11 and 12 for 40%, where Cruz was 27 of 88 for 30%. So Cruz, as we saw, was a little more wild and a little more inaccurate. But Roach was also very selective and was landing his shots too. I know these are just punch stats and you have to use your eyes and all that, but a lot of these judges had one judge, I don't know what he was watching, the guy who had it 115, 111, like he gave the last four rounds to Pitbull. I mean, that's just did not happen. Like 115, 111, Chris Tellez. He gave 1, 2, 3, 4, the final four rounds he gave to Pitbull. There's always that one scorecard out there that's the real outlier. There's some even one, like 113, 113.
More than the outlier, that's the opposite of what we saw.
It's like the Adelaide Bird, the 118, 110, the one card that really messes things up, even though I think either way it would have been still a draw because both of the other judges had it 113, 113. 113, 113 is fine. Like a couple days after, that's a very fair scorecard. The 115, 111, come on, like the last four rounds all to Cruz? No way. That's not facts. That's not
Nobody
reality.
Nobody saw that. Nobody saw that. Neither did that guy. He didn't see that. He decided to make it that.
That is a great one. Everyone saw that, but that guy didn't even see it.
From now on, we're using that for bad judging.
Oh my god, that was
nobody
great.
Saw it like that. Neither did he. He just decided it was.
He just got tired, and he was just like, you know what? I want to go back to the room, so I'm just gonna fill out the rest of this, and then maybe
those kind of scorecards scare me because I'm not saying that this is the case, but it gives me the idea that like they're looking at it and they're like, you know, I got to make up some ground here. Like I gave too many rounds to the other guy. You know, you get that feeling. I'm not saying that's what happened. It just like that when you see scorecards that way.
I mean, I've been an unofficial score. I'm not saying I've done that, but like you're human. This is a human sport. It's the human element. It's in every part of the sport. That's what makes it so interesting. That's what makes it so controversial. That's what makes it a lightning rod. That's what allows us to do this show because there's so many opinions. There's so many different ways. Things are so subjective because you could just look at the comments on social media. It's hilarious. You post one thing and it's like, I don't know how you watch boxing if you don't think Roach won. Dan, I don't know what you were watching. Pitbull won. And everyone draws their line in the sand, and it goes right down to the judges, goes right down to the referee. Should the referee have taken a point away? I think he should have. I think Pitbull was holding. I think he was hitting low. He was warned numerous times. So that point deduction, I thought, was pretty fair.
Headbutts, shoulder bumps, low blows. I mean, yeah, you name it. He was being a billy goat out there. He was diving in with his head all night long. Surprised it took that long for him to lose that point. So him saying that he didn't agree with that point deduction is ridiculous. It's just that's part of his style too. He's aggressive. He's got to come in. He's short. He doesn't jab. You know, he's leading with hooks. So you're gonna get head clashes and things like that. And when you're a smaller guy coming up, I mean that's what's gonna happen. But in terms of that deduction, I mean that was plenty fine. I thought it was warranted.
Yeah, so we had a point deduction in the seventh, and then we have Roach down in the third. Roach down for the first time in his career, which really, really shows how forceful Pitbull is and how powerful he is. First four rounds, Pitbull. Because it's two different guys. It's two different fighters here. And, you know, the first,
very different.
The first four or five rounds, he looks like a world beater. I mean, I was really looking at him in this performance. I was like, damn, this is really like what we were saying on the podcast. Like, there's good Pitbull and there's bad Pitbull. This was good Pitbull first four or five rounds. I'm like, this guy can hang with anybody at 140 and be super dangerous. But as we know,
and then the last four rounds, you're like, oh, this guy is not very good.
Dude, he got disarmed. He got the crowd taken right out of it. I found myself, it went from a super exciting fight in the first four or five rounds to a clinch fest to, wow, Pitbull's getting thoroughly outboxed to the final two, three rounds, 10, 11, 12. Very exciting. And I didn't catch this. Jake Donovan wrote it in for Boxing Scene that Lamont Roach Sr. told Junior in the 11th and 12th rounds not to take any unnecessary risks, which I didn't really see that. I didn't see him like run in the 11th and 12th round, but maybe it was in the back of his mind, like don't go for it. And maybe, you know, he could have even turned it on even more from the stats that I gave you before. So that's something I have to look at again. If I rewatch.
Do you know he broke his hand?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too.
So that could have been what his father was looking out for. You know, you're down one hand. Don't take any unnecessary risks. that's the thing.
Did they think he was winning?
That's another thing. I don't know. They think they had enough. They were ahead enough, but also,
no way.
When you have one hand trading with the guys, it becomes impossible. You can't trade with a guy with one hand, especially a guy like Pitbull. So I could see where that comes from. Fighting with one hand, because I've fought with one hand before. I understand what it's like. And in fact, it's funny. When I fought Ruslan, I technically was fighting one-handed because I had to protect the eye so much. I literally just kept that hand up over that eye because if I got hit, they were going to stop the fight. So I didn't exchange with him a whole lot on the inside down the stretch because I was protecting that hand. If you have one hand, you cannot trade with a guy who lets their hands go, especially when they have fast hands like Cruz does. So it was an impressive performance, especially with one hand. But yeah, that's one of those fights where you got to wake up on Sunday and, man, be like, what if I would have done this? What if I would have done that in this round? You know, this is the kind of fight that racks your brain for many years.
And it's back to back, man. I posted this. No. Lamont Roach has not won a single scorecard in either of the Tank or Pitbull fights. Not That's one crazy. Judge, six judges, not one of them had Roach winning either any round or any fight, I should say, any scorecard, which it's
both
kind of a
majority
hard thing
draws.
To explain. Yeah, both majority draws, so no one had Roach winning. When he made a case where if Steve Willis does his job correctly, he wins that Roach. He wins the Tank fight. He probably stays at 135 and defends that title, or maybe gets the rematch, and he does it. So, you know, he uses that to his advantage to go to 140, up his profile, gets the Pitbull fight. Now this is for an interim shot at 130, at 140. And he's telling us at 140, I want Gary Antoine Russell. I want Shakur. I want the Teofimo winner. I'm not saying he overlooked them, but now he doesn't get the nod here either. And, you know, he says afterwards that, you know, this is bullshit in the ring. I get he's really emotional right after the fight. But, like, the Tank fight, he had a pretty warranted beef. There was, like, you know, that was poor refereeing and everything in that fight. This fight, I felt like, you know what, like, you gave it your all. You, the first four rounds, you were either forced into a firefight or you chose to fight in the pocket like that. If it's the latter, it's very admirable. If it's the first, that's just part of the game. And then you didn't finish strong enough and you got a draw. I think a draw is fine. And run it back with him. Like, I know Pitbull might not want to run it back with him because I don't know if you caught this. Javonta Davis made a appearance back on Twitter yesterday. Fired off some bombs and then deactivated it once again, but in the middle of his tirades yesterday, insane, dude. In the middle of his tirades yesterday, he said that he wants a rematch with Pitbull, not Roach, once his knee gets better.
I'll believe that when I see it. And what's wrong with his knee?
I don't know. I mean, people were like, hey, champ, we miss you. And he just writes, F you.
Dude, savage. I'm sorry. That's funny.
He's a savage. He does not care.
He's very funny.
He went on a whole rant about MVP and Jake Paul, and Jake knew how he was going to get pieced up, and he pulled out of the fight. Like, the woman that accused me has a history of accusing men for money. You just believed it. And then he's out, and he deactivates, deletes it off of his phone. But Pitbull, like, I don't know if there will be a rematch, because Pitbull is the type of guy that is always looking for that highest bidder. Like, he's been chasing the rematch with Gervonta for years. You know, Ryan Garcia was linked to Pitbull. Like, he's always looking for the biggest and best, because despite him having his pitfalls, like, he is a very flawed fighter. There were a lot of Mexicans in that crowd. Canelo Alvarez has maybe one or two fights left. Like, when Sean Gibbons says that Pitbull Cruz is one of the most popular Mexican fighters outside of Canelo, you better start believing it, because this guy is had the crowd going crazy, and that's a huge market. And I understand why Javonta says that. I understand why now fighters are going to look at Pitbull and say, yeah, I will fight this guy. And so they have to be careful with how they match him up. So I would not be shocked if, once again, Roach does not get a rematch.
I unfortunately, or whatever, I did not see that until you just made that point. You're probably right that poor Roach. I thought for sure we're going to get a rematch. Fight was really good. Both guys said they wanted it in the post fight, but you know how things can change with a couple days. And you're probably right. It probably doesn't get the rematch. Cause, and I was saying this all week when I was doing the media row for this fight, Lamont Roach, although he did not get the rematch with Gervonta Davis, although he did not get the the first victory over Gervonta Davis, two things that he really wanted. He's still winning because he had a main event with Cruz coming up, and Cruz has access to the Mexican market. And that is huge for an opponent of a guy like him. This is prior to the fight, obviously. And I think now I think he's going to get a lot of credit. I think the Mexican fans, you know, got introduced to Lamont Roach, which will ultimately help him down the stretch. But do they run it back again? I don't have an answer for that. And I'm not confident that we see them in the ring next.
Yeah, because Roach is not aligned with PBC. He's a Pro Box TV fighter. He has his own promotional company, too. I know Pro Box, you would know this, works closely with Top Rank, works closely with PBC. So he could end up on, I know, like, I'm sure Roach wants the rematch. Pitbull is a little bit of a bigger draw, or a lot bigger of a draw.
Yeah.
Still has the interim title at 140, and as we say on the show, and like, well, there's a lot of belts out there, but the interim does mean something. It means something more than being the mandatory. And the champ at WBC is Gary Antoine Russell. So I don't know if Pitbull will seek that out. I don't know if PBC will put that on one of their cards in early next year. Do I want to see a rematch? Of course. Like I don't know where Roach goes from here. That's the next topic here. It's like, where does Roach go outside of a rematch with Pitbull? Because he does not have the same fan base. He has a good fan base, but it's not like the Mexicans.
It's growing.
And it's growing for sure. But it's very fair to say it's not as big as Pitbull's. And, you know, he doesn't have a title attached to his name or even an interim title. So, like, where does Roach go from here? I'm very curious. Does he stay at 140? Does he still try to get that rematch does he still try to get the winner of Tio and Shakur? Because I will say this about Roach. He is a big name. Like, I would say right now he's one of the more recognizable names in boxing.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's done a really good job on a media tour since the draw with Gervonta Davis and then all the getting the rematch, not getting the rematch. I think, again, it gave him a lot of street cred. So he is a very well-known entity. And he stays in the public eye. He's been very, very out there, which, you know, a lot of fighters hate to do, especially guys who are pretty humble like Lamont is. But he's doing his due diligence. He knows how important this is for his career right now, and he's doing a really good job. But, yeah, in terms of what he does next, no, he's not as big of a draw as Cruz is, and that was apparent in everything leading up to this fight and the fight itself. He also has that hand injury. Not great timing because he's going to be left out. You know, he's going to be out. We don't know how long. Hand injuries are weird, man. They usually take way longer than doctors say. So that's something to take into account as well. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Roach is going to have a lot of thinking to do as this hand heals and get ready for what's next.
He's really good on that. Yeah, I agree. He's really good on the mic, and yeah, you're right. He's really good, like putting himself out there. He said he's going to do a stream from Japan. I think he's going to go on vacation. He started tweeting today. He didn't tweet Sunday. He was probably just so hurt. He's got his lip was all busted up, hand busted up, traveling after a long week of doing media, after a long couple of months. It's been a pretty crazy, tumultuous year for Lamont Roach. I don't think he's complaining because every fighter dreams of blowing up like this in 1 year. Definitely a very successful year for Roach, but it's weird because he's got nothing to show for it. Two draws, and someone put out there, it's like, when's the last time you saw a championship caliber fighter with two draws? I mean, Mario Barrios comes to mind. I think, didn't he have two consecutive draws, or did he have a fight in between Ramos?
It was Pacquiao and Ramos.
Yeah. At 140, you have Richardson Hitchens, who will call anybody and everyone out. He's got the IBF belt. You got Subriel Matias, who is fighting Dalton Smith on January 10th. You have Puelo, who is a former champ and waiting in the wings. Barboza, Gary Antoine Russell, Adam Azim. And, you know, I think Roach fits right in there. Well, maybe down to 135, see what's there. That's the one thing that he does have going for him, is that he said he can fight at both weights. You know, guys can say that, but, you know, does he want to get back down to 135? I don't know. I thought he looked pretty good at 140. I think he is a very strong fighter. And you were saying how, you know, he ingratiated himself to a lot of fans with the way he carries himself. I think he's ingratiated his self to fans, like, the way he fights. Like, this dude is standing and trading. You know, he's not the biggest, hardest puncher, but he's got enough pop. I think this guy could definitely hang at 140. Like, I didn't see anything where, like, oh, man, he should go back down to 135. No. He is a 140-pounder, true and true.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see him down at 135. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. The fights, the profiles of those fighters that are down there are way lower, and they might be way tougher. You know, you got a Muay Thai and Andy Cruz winner. That's tough in both directions. And there's no money there. You've got Abdullah Mason is another one. No money there. And it's just a matter of time before that kid is an absolute monster, whether he might be already. So that's not really a great move either. And then you got the whole, what side of the street are they on? You know, if ProBox TV seems to work well with PBC, there's a lot of guys at 140 for him to fight there. You mentioned three of them. You mentioned Matias. You mentioned Puello. And you mentioned Russell.
Russell. Russell's a guy. I like to see Russell with any of these guys. I think he's such a really good talent. He had one of the best performances of this year back in February when he disposed of Martin or Venezuela.
Yes.
Right?
Ryo.
Was Venezuela?
Yeah, he beat up Ryo pretty bad.
Yeah, and it was just virtuoso.
Super dominant. Ridiculous.
Yeah, so I like to see Roach mix it up with any of those guys. One thing I did not like from Roach that he said afterwards was almost immediately. He's like, I'm not even 140 pound. You know, I'm a 130 guy that's come all the way up. You don't have to say that, man. Like, no, like you don't have to use any excuses. And you fought really admirably and you did not look like a smaller guy in there. That could just be him, you know, the immediate reaction. I thought it was pretty cool that they had him at this table, like kind of like right next to each other. It was, pretty good. It was just like a kind of a throwback type of fight. We're in San Antonio. It has some classic fights back in the day. Some wonky scorecards. You know, Pinell Whitaker.
Can't be Texas without a wonky scorecard, without some weird.
I mean, did we predict it or we not predict it?
It's got to be some weirdness.
Chris, you literally said, like, you know, I said, hey, I think Roche should win, but I'm not ruling out a bad scorecard because we're in Texas. You on the clip were like, I'm not betting on this fight strictly because of that. So I'm telling you guys, you got to lock into our Friday episodes before our big card because we've been on the money lately, man. You know, not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but you know, we know this sport. And, you know,
I've had a lot of people reach out about our clips about that. Like, you said it. we're on, dude. We're on.
Listen, trying to make you guys money, and we're trying to tell you where to avoid placing bets and where you can make your picks. And, yeah, we'll see what happens with Roach and Pitbull. Will they run it back? It probably will not be till about mid next year if Roach's hand, how severe it is broken. And it was kind of a grueling fight, so they'll take some time off. Speaking of us knowing our stuff here, Oshaki Foster shuts out Stephen Fulton. I thought Foster was going to win. I did not have him 12-0-ing Stephen Fulton. You know, I kind of alluded to, I did not like the way Fulton looked and was carrying himself in the fighter interviews we were doing on Thursday of fight week. You know, he was talking about how hard it is to do interviews when he's dehydrated, and he just didn't look like he wanted to be there. I get a lot of these guys don't want to be there, but something in my mind was like, all right, he's either going to miss weight or he's not, or he, like, Foster's way more switched on just from body language. When Foster came in the room, completely different vibe. And, I use that in our analysis for the fight. But once again, I thought that Fulton would have his moments. I thought Fulton would either, like, you know, make it
win
a
rounds,
fight.
Maybe? You think he would win rounds?
He didn't win
a round.
Did he even get a sympathy round in there?
Round one. Scorecard. That was the only round that we were watching. Round one was maybe the only one that you could have given him, but it was absolutely virtuoso from Oshaki Foster. Oshaki Foster's the guy to beat at 30, man.
Yeah, will he stay there? Because, Chris, insane tomfoolery from the WBC. I don't know if PBC was involved in it. So Fulton misses weight.
Tomfoolery.
Texas tomfoolery was the theme all week in Texas. And brisket, a lot of brisket eaten. Fulton comes in 132 for a 130-pound fight. WBC decides, you know what? You know, we're going to make this a interim fight at 135. Whole different weight class. When they already had ordered an interim fight at 135 for two other fighters. I've never heard that. I've never seen or heard that. I think PBC wanted to keep the title fights in line in this card. They wanted to say, hey, we have four title fights, even if they're all interims. There was only one real title on the line, and it was Lara's, and you could dissect that one, too, because Lara hasn't fought a live body in, like, 10 years. But that is nuts, number one. So Fulton blows past the weight. And then there was some thoughts like, hey, maybe he'll look even better because he's fighting closer to his natural weight. No, it was like the opposite. Like he looked chunky on the scale, And Foster was Foster. He's just so freaking good with his jab and his movement.
So I heard two things after the fact, which would have changed my picks prior. So my nephew, Michael, said he had seen Fulton. I don't know if it was like a month ago or whatever. And he said he had a little bit of a hot belly going on. And that's kind of weird.
He didn't get rid of it.
That's kind of weird going into a fight. You're a couple of weeks out. And then this is absolute hearsay. I heard it from Paulie Malignaggi. He said it on our show today on ProBox TV, that he had heard that Danny Garcia had recently opened up a bar in Philly and that Fulton was hanging out there quite a bit. This is all hearsay. This is from Paulie Malignaggi's mouth. Don't shoot the messenger. He said it. I didn't hear
that.
This. I didn't hear that. No, it's not. It's not that crazy at all. But that's the kind of thing that fighters will self-sabotage themselves. And this sounds like that kind of situation where he's moving up in weight. And whether it's maybe he didn't listen, I can't imagine that Fulton went out there and was like, this guy's got nothing for me. I don't even need to prepare. And I'm still going to beat this guy. I can't see how he could wrap his head around that. But does he look at this like this guy's too big? You know, this is a bit of a bridge too far. Maybe I don't need to, you know, I'm not going to work so hard in camp because it's not really going to matter. Which kind of turned out to I don't think any version of Fulton would have beat Oshaki that night. He looked way too good. And maybe Fulton knew that. I don't know. It's just weird to see a fighter of his level, who's as good as he is, blow past the weight, not show up in shape, and just like didn't really care. You know, it's very weird.
It was very strange. His corner was a mess. Like Boozy Ennis, Jaron Ennis' dad, great trainer, but there was chaos in his corner. There were so many voices, and I would not be shocked if he was doing that. You got another thing to keep in mind too. This fight was on again, off again, on again, off again. Did not affect Oshaki Foster whatsoever. Affect Fulton.
It might have affected him positively, actually, because that's the best I've ever seen him look.
Yes. And, you know, it was the tale of two fighters who were more hungry. Oshaki Foster is always has that chip on his shoulder, never good enough, you know, had some losses. Fulton has reached the mountaintop. This guy fought in front of 50,000 at Tokyo Dome, probably walked away with at least 5 to 8 million. Once again, this is all hearsay, and you can attest this way more than me. You're a fighter. Like, maybe that all crept into the – all goes into the sauce, as we say. Like, Fulton, I think he's doing pretty well in financially.
You never know, though.
You never know. But, like, partying a little bit, not taking the fight so seriously. The fight gets canceled. The fight gets re-announced. The fight gets canceled again. Blows past the weight. That's what you see. I'm not trying to take anything away from Oshaki Foster, but this is what we tend to do in this sport is, like, we look at the – negative, and we focus on why the loser lost. And it was because it was as much as Oshaki like was dominant, you were like, what the heck? Like, is this did he get like shot like Space Jam? Did he get like zapped by the Monstars? Because Fulton, like, he had nothing. But Foster, let's talk about Foster. He took it away from him. That after the first round, that jab was like, it was like he was like
both
in every
sides,
movement,
dude. From both sides, his jab was disarming and dominant from his left side and his right side. That's crazy. He put it all together. And listen, we've talked about Foster on our show quite a bit because I'm a big fan. I really rate him. But he's always been inconsistent. He's always allowed enough leeway where judges would give rounds to his opponent, which is why he's had so many close fights. Split decision with Abraham Nova. The loss to Robson Cansesa, which was insane to me. But even the second one, the rematch was a split decision. All of his fights are close. He allows the judges the idea that, you can give the other guy the round. Did not do that on Saturday. He was so diligent each and every round. Locked in. You said that. You said he was locked in all week. He was locked in all fight night. He'd never done that before. He showed he's had the world-class talent, but he's never shown the world-class discipline to do it for 12 rounds. Saturday night, he did it against a very good opponent. This guy is a whole different guy. He's a real problem.
Yeah. Do you think he'll stay at 135?
A 30? Or do you think he'll stay? Well, because this
fight was at 135. This fight was at 135.
It's silliness. I don't even want to.
He's been chirping. Him and Shakur have been chirping back and forth.
Yeah, he said he wants Shakur. I saw that. Listen, I want to see him with all these guys. Show him the money, baby. I want to see Shock with all these guys.
Yeah, I think this is another case of a guy that, you know, he's not the biggest name, but he does have top rank behind him wherever they could still make fights. So 130, he could stay there, but there are really not any. There's Jazza Dickens, there's Sugar Nunes and there's Emmanuel Navarrete.
Navarrete fight. Again, you get access to Mexican fan base and Navarrete.
Does Navarrete have a fight lined up though?
I think he's fighting the guy you just said.
Dickens? No, Sugar.
Sugar.
Nunes,
yeah.
I think that they have a date and everything. I think it's happening in January. So that could happen. If Oshaki wants to stay there. Ring has him as the number one 130-pounder.
Navarrete. Oshaki is?
Yeah. Italian, the Anthony, I can't pronounce his last name.
Kakache.
Yes. Lamont Roach at 4. Conceição. Conceição's out of the picture. Ray Ford versus Foster at 130. Ooh,
that's a good fight. Ooh, that's a good
fight. Here's another thing too, Chris. Like, we just talked about how 135 is probably not good for Lamont Roach because there's some really like hard fights there and there's not a lot of money. Like Oshaki Foster doesn't have the profile of Roach and doesn't really have the benefit of the doubt there. So if Oshaki wants to stay at 135, he could potentially fight some of the champs there.
I would be okay with him going 35, fighting all those guys, whether it's the Muay Thai Andy Cruz winner, and it's Adela Mason. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I thought 130 was just like, once Shakur left 130, it kind of took a nosedive. Like, there's not a lot of names there. It's almost forgotten about because it's not featherweight and it's not lightweight. It's just like kind of just there. So Foster, I think he's in a great spot right now.
That's kind of how 130's always been, though. It's always been that betweener weight.
Stepping stone.
Yeah.
Just drive through it. Drive through city. Fly over city. Yeah, so I think like if Foster is like in this position where this is great for him. Because considering the type of fighter he is, the type of profile he is, you could be a name at 130, or you could go to 135, or WBC just sanctioned you. Maybe it was because of the interview we did, where everyone was talking about what.
How old is Oshaki?
I think he might be 30. I'm terrible with ages. Everyone knows that this is not an age podcast. I'm trying to type his name in. Oshaki 32. Foster, 32. That's time is now. Great performance. The punch stats are absurd. He outlanded Fulton 191 to 56.
Wow.
More than a plus 100. 101 to 31 in the power department. The jab was jabbing. He landed 26% of his jabs, landed 90 jabs. Maybe the WBC was like, hey, we saw your interview with Dan. You're one of the only fighters this week that did not bash the sanctioning fees. Because Foster said, you know what? This belt changed my life. They told me that the money goes to ex-fighters, it goes to a lot of different things. And I think that Mauricio needs to, if the money is going to those retired fighters and fighters that are in help, like, you better show us that, Mauricio.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We need receipts on that.
The WBC had an awful, awful week last week, whether it was ridiculous things like this Foster Fulton fight or whether it was what's going on with the TKO in Crawford. And there were a slew of other things that I can't even keep up with. WBC needs to come forward and to let us where are these sanction fees going? Because even Spence, who I ran into in the hotel. I ran into Spence in the hotel. Was it Friday night? Great shape, number one. He says, what's up?
Nice.
He was in great shape, Spence. And I was like, damn, bro. I was like, you look like you could make 160 or 154. And he starts laughing, and I asked him, he was with his fiance. I was like, do you want him to come back? And she said, whatever makes him happy. And I was like, hey, man, so what have you been up to?
That's a good woman.
And he goes, that's a politically correct answer. That's not her real answer. But I said, what have you been up to? And he's like, I'm on my ranch. I got my kids. They play sports. I drive them to sports. So, like, I know he put out a tweet, and then he deleted it, how close he is to coming back. But
yeah, I saw that.
That was pretty funny. He was making fun of Tim Bradley, who apparently squared up a tree.
Yeah, I was looking at that photo. I'm like, that's Tim Bradley, right? That's an odd photo. I'm not sure where that photo came from. I mean, is that a recent photo?
To Tim, it's Tim Bradley's content. I'm telling you, it's getting stranger and stranger.
Oh, I guess I gotta start following Tim.
Should we reach out to Tim? Should we ask how he's doing? I kind of like it. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, just keep doing it. Tim's my boy. I love Tim Bradley. I talked to him recently. I didn't think anything was off. He's fine.
Good.
It's like, yeah,
you got to make
fine.
Crazy content. We're talking.
Yeah,
about
why not?
It. Like,
yeah.
Before you came on as co-host, I would have him on all the time. I said you were pound for pound the best boxing guest because you will say anything. Like, you don't care. You don't give a single damn about offending anyone.
He's great because that's kind of something I took from his book too. Is because he's he shuts it off and just goes and just leaves and doesn't let it bother him. But although I will say this though, when we had him on ProBox a few times, he was going to battle in the comments with people consistently.
He's like me.
It was very funny.
He's like me. I was going to battle the other day, yesterday, with some guy in the DMs. I was like, "What am I doing?
What are you doing?"
Like halfway through, I was like, "What am I sending this guy with like no followers?"
Right. It's Sunday. What am I doing?
God, I got to stop that. But just to backtrack from Bradley to Spence to the WBC. Yeah, WBC needs to. I'm sure they will. Show some receipts, because if you are giving money to, it is a business. I get it. Like, you want that green belt. You want your fights to be sanctioned. You want everything that comes along with it. You should have to pay those sanction fees. If we knew where the money was going, if it's for retired fighters, if it's for, you know, all sorts of positive things, if it's going into the pockets of these guys, obviously that's wrong. If it's going to finance these crazy conventions that we see, you know, that's a gray area. So we'll see. I think it came into focus big time this week. And, you know, the whole Crawford thing, throwing the belt away and TKO, yeah. You know, Nick Khan going on the Ring magazine. Nick Khan, the president of TKO, and which is going to now have Zuffa Boxing, and Zuffa Boxing's whole campaign now is no belts. And Nick Khan does the media rounds. Crawford throws the belt away. Suleiman strips him. That's not a coincidence, everybody. Like, that's a coordinated move by Zuffa TKO, as they are starting to say, the hell with these belts. This all happened during the week, fight week. It was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there was WBC, made a lot of weird, questionable decisions all week long. But that one, just bad timing. Really bad timing with everything that's going on at TKO. And it's just highlighting the issues. And when you have a guy who is becoming outspoken in Terrence Crawford, who is just elevated beyond everything, because he can talk shit about the belts. He doesn't need the belts. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't need... He's in charge of his own ship now. He's above. He makes the fights himself. He calls guys up and makes fights that can't happen.
He's got Turkey now in the biggest way.
And that exactly. Now he's got that. He really doesn't need it. He zero fucks given from Terrence Crawford. And you see some other fighters talk out. We talk about Oshaki Foster. You talk about Errol Spence. You talk about these other guys who are like, hey, man, my belt's important. This belt's important to me. My career.
It's different for everybody.
My belt was extremely, extremely important to me. And it was necessary for me to get out of Long Island. But not everyone has the same path. And that's just the way boxing is. So you can't just blanket statement go across the board and be like, fuck these belts. We don't need these belts. Some guys need these belts. A lot of guys need these belts. Most guys need these belts. The belts are not a bad thing.
If anything, it shows the hierarchy and the class disparity, I should say, in boxing, yeah. Where, you know, Oshaki Foster and Terrence Crawford are considered the same on paper. We are champions of this sport. But Terrence Crawford made $100 million for the Crawford-Canelo fight, even if it's less. Like, they did lower it down to 0.6. Apparently, that's what Suleiman offered, and Crawford's like, we never had an agreement. So I thought Suleiman kind of messed up a few times by saying, like, he didn't even apologize.
Yeah,
dude, going to take your side in this. Like, no one feels sympathy for you guys, once again, because you don't tell us what those fees go towards. $300,000? It's a lot of money. You know, what does it go to? And Nick Khan, when he was on with Kellerman, and read between the lines there, I believe Nick Khan was Max Kellerman's agent at one time, and they're all kind of working together now, said that, you know, Suleiman had to demanded a suite for the Canelo fight. He demanded all these tickets. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes with these organizations. And I think there's a awakening is happening. It was kind of nuts during fight week in San Antonio to be following a fight week. And I'm there for the, because I love the sport and for the goodness of it. Like, I like being on the road. I like following a big card, like being part of it. And then every time you open your phone, you're seeing Congress, like members of our government, like talking boxing and the TKO thing. You're seeing guys like Nick Khan doing these interviews saying that, you know, we're going to get rid of belts. And it's like, it was always at the distance, it was always in the peripheral, kind of in the background. But now it's like right in the forefront. And I think it's happening a lot faster than a lot of fans even realize.
Yeah, and like you said, when I'm thinking about boxing and the government, it makes me feel very uneasy.
I was trying very not to uneasy. Look at it. I was like, thank God I'm in San Antonio and I could just eat tacos and go on the Riverwalk. Because if I was home, I'd be locked in to this Congress hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. This is across the board. The more government gets involved with anything, the worse off that will be. That's how it. That's just how it goes. When government gets involved, everything gets worse. I don't expect this to be a positive thing either. I don't know where it's going to go. But
well, what they're trying to do is get rid of. Is trying to do the Muhammad Ali Revival Act.
Right, like, what does that ultimately turn into? Like, how much of that does that really change things? And we're not going to see it. So it's going to just roll out as it comes. We're not really going to know what it's going to look like.
Oh, Zuffa Boxing has shows planned for next year. Like, they're going to roll out cards. I don't know who's going to be on these cards or like who's signing to Zuffa Boxing. We haven't seen a single announcement of a fighter signing. I've heard some rumblings about who's going to be working the shows in terms of talent. And we're going to hear one way or another if the Ali Act gets amended and they're going to be their own entity and they're not going to use WBC rankings for sure. And will other promoters follow suit? That's something that Dana White said at the post-fight presser for the most recent pay-per-view this past weekend. He's like, all right, this is most likely going to pass in Congress. And then promoters are going to be able to be their own sanctioning bodies, which is the root of the amendment. And Dana White's like, you're telling me that Matchroom is not going to follow suit with us? You're telling me that these promoters all want to do this. They're just not saying it out loud.
Yeah. He's spot on. And we've said that, like and I said that on a past show too. The promoters, they're not on the side of the fighters. The Muhammad Ali Act protects fighters, not promoters. So them taking up arms. Yeah. It doesn't protect us that much, but them taking up arms against, you know, TKO is just because it's them. They're just taking out arms against that. It's not against
exactly.
It's not against what they're trying to do. They like what they're trying to do. Trust me. So this thing is going to pass, and things are going to change. But it's going to be muddy. It's going to be muddy waters for a bit.
And they also said that in this thing is like you don't have to. Fighters can either use the old Ali Act or they can use the new one.
I don't know how that doesn't make sense to me. I don't know how you do that.
That's like just such like misleading. Like, what do they call that? Like a misleading truth here? Like that's just put in there to say, you know what? It's not that. Like, fighters have the choice now. Like, they're using all that proper language. Fighters have the choice. They're going to have health care. During that Congress session, I was following along. Box Rec Gray did a great job of giving us updates on it. A lot of the talking points for those that were that wanted to pass this new Ali Act were saying that the same old talking points, like, oh, it's not on TV anymore. The best don't fight the best, like the UFC. You heard all of the same talking points over and over. So we're going to see how it all plays out. We're going to cover it on the show one way or another. It's definitely part of the sport. And I didn't think it was coming this fast. Like, I'm not that locked in to it. So I didn't even know they were going in front of Congress. But, you know, for that, with the TKO media rollout and then the Crawford thing. I mean, these are very smart people over there. Nick Khan is one of the most brilliant minds in sports entertainment. So yeah, I would not be shocked if they knew that WBC was going to shoot themselves in the foot at their convention. So in the same week, let's all go out and do our media rounds and, you know, we'll really bury them.
Well, these are really powerful players. For them to get this to go to Congress this quick shows you how big they are and how powerful they are. And it's going to go through. It's going to go through. And especially, you know, Dana White and Donald Trump, DT, have their personal relationship. So, of course, you're going to try and push it through while Donnie's still in office. So, I don't know, man. Like you said,
bro.
Yeah, but still, like, these things take a long time. But not with power players like these guys. We're able to push this through this quick. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I will say it's going to work. Before we see like the really widespread changes, that's going to take a long time. But there will be boxing on Paramount next year, and it will be called Zuffa Boxing. And we'll have some familiar faces on the broadcast. And I don't know who's going to be fighting in these fights. That's the thing. Is like, will these be top quality fights? If not, then they're no different than a Friday night fight, which is fine. Like, I miss Friday night fights, but it's not going to change the game. Like, we always say this. Remember PBC, they got all the money from the investors and – you know, they had the crazy entrances. You fought on some of those cards. The Hans Zimmer and Bob Costas and crazy rollout. And the fights were good at first. And then eventually just turned into normal fights. And fans
Matchroom
were like,
did the same thing. The $1 billion deal. Like, this happens. This is not that foreign.
But the only thing that's different with this one is they're going to be changing the economic paradigm. of the sport.
Yes, and the entities that are involved. These guys have done this with WWE, and like this is major, major stuff.
Yeah, putting a button on the card. Arizlendi Lara UD's Johan Gonzalez was one of the worst, most boring fights I've seen in a long time. I think Lara really should have went in there and got rid of him right away. Did he drop him early and he dropped him late? I don't know. Like, Arizlendi Lara hasn't fought a top 10 opponent in almost like seven, a long time.
And at least this one wasn't his fault. But
Janibek's an idiot.
Yes, absolutely. Really shot himself in the foot. Shot boxing.
That's my main takeaway from this fight.
Shot the middleweight division in the foot. You know, it's really unfortunate because the middleweight division we've been talking about for so long is being a wasteland, and it was right there on the cusp of turning over, and this guy fucks it up. And he's gonna pay for this bad because I don't know where he goes from here. He was having trouble getting fights. They're gonna strip him though.
Yeah, they probably should, but Egas is a very powerful guy. I'm curious to see what happens to Janibek. Like, is it going to be a long suspension? This is a serious drug. We talked about it in the last episode. This isn't like some, you know, even Osterine, which is a serious drug, but there's a threshold for it. There's no tolerance when it comes to this drug. It cannot be in your system, mm-hmm. and it was. And I don't know, he can use every excuse in the world, but it was in his system. And it should have been Janibek versus Lara, which would have been a super intriguing fight because Lara still has, he was winging power shots, Lara, give him that. He's just 42. Like, he looks slow. He looks slow, but he's powerful.
Yeah, I'm a little more lenient with my criticisms of Lara for this one because I'm like, he's 42. This was a last-minute guy. He's a sub-championship-level guy. He went out there. He handled him. Was it exciting? No. But at the same time, I'm 42. I'm not going out there to be exciting. I'm going out there to win fights. I'm going out there to win fights and get the big paydays. That's another thing. You don't want to take too many risks because there's a big payday looming, and this wasn't
Is there, though? Because I asked him about Adames during the fight week. And I posted it. I was like, hey, will you fight Adames? And he doesn't understand English, but he understood my question. He immediately goes, no. He's on my team. I didn't know there were teammates, stable mates. So he's not fighting good. Adames, and well, Adames but, is not fighting
but if
him.
They if they strip Janibek, Lara's not going to get the first shot
at who, like the vacant title,
at whoever the number one contender is. Would they not make the number one contender and Lara right away?
They should. Well, would it be Ramos? Okay, to that fight. Who?
Ooh.
I like Ramos. Thought it was a great performance. It was an awesome fight. I mean, you were right. Yes. You were right on the money, Chris. You predicted, you know, it was a minus 1400 favorite. No. I mean, that was a really fun fight. Mosley is Sneaky tough, man. Great chin, quick. I like Ramos a lot. He's young. I do too. But, like, where's his second gear? I didn't see his second gear, so I'm getting hit way, way too much.
Yeah. No, I don't know. He's so promising, but he tends to kind of just let you down a little bit. But it's because you're looking at, you know, you can see the talent is there and the potential. But like,
right, that's why I'm giving such a harsh criticism.
Yeah, we're being harsh, but he's a great guy and he's a good fighter. But you expect more. And he just hasn't been able, like you said, find that extra gear. Spoke to Robert Garcia today. And he said that he's very willing to have Virgil go up to 160 and fight Lara immediately.
God. So, he said, why not Boots?
He said that would be a guy that he would. It's been brought up to him as well, and he said,
Chris, I don't like this update. I appreciate you bringing.
That's the perfect kind of fight.
I appreciate you bringing that to the table here as someone that talks a lot of names in the sport. We want to see Boots and Virgil.
Of course we do, and they do too. But and I'm not saying that's been a current talking point. I'm saying it's been brought up before. So I'm not saying it's stepping in front of the Boots Virgil information, but Robert also said he should know possibly by the end of this week what Virgil's next move is.
Damn, Chris Algieri, freaking breaking news!
You're not the only one out there, dude. I'm out there. I'm in these streets.
I don't really break news. I just do interviews. You know, I already told everyone from the start. I think I broke one story my whole whatever career I've put together here. And I was like, man, someone told me you either break news all the time or you don't break news at all. Because I
talk to a lot of people and I'm in gyms a lot. You get a lot from gyms.
Definitely. I wish I was around more gyms, to be honest. Yeah,
the pulse of the sport is in the gyms, the lifeblood. And then when you talk to high profile people like Robert, you get,
and he's willing kind of, to, he's no nonsense. He'll just tell you shit.
Nope. he's not telling, it's not secrets to him. It's like, it's going to cut out eventually. He's been in this sport for so goddamn long in every way that, nothing phases him.
Yeah. I could break more news. Like I talked to a lot of these guys. A lot of times I couldn't break news because I was working with CompuBox. Like I was privy to a lot of emails and stuff like cancellations, fight. And then my dad's like, you can't like, don't run with that because it's not even out there yet. And then what they do is they just text Coppinger, and Mike Coppinger copies and pastes and puts it on Twitter. And good for him. He's made a whole career of it. 160 is weird. You got Janet Beck, who's they haven't updated their website. Number one at the ring. Adamas, number two, but Adamas and Lara won't fight each other. They don't even have Lara in the top 10.
he's a current world champion, but he's not in the top 10 of the weight class?
It's not that crazy. I mean, you went, yeah, wild. It is, because he's better than Austin.
No, it is crazy.
Aaron McKenna, that guy is just never going to get any momentum.
He's pretty good, really though. Good. He's good.
Troy Isley, 15-0 with 5 knockouts. Top rank. I believe he's a top rank guy. Yeah. They have Conor Benn, number 4 at 160. So Conor Benn is number 4 at 160 at the ring and number 1 at welterweight by the WBC. Gotta love it.
Is he ranked to 54 as well?
Sure he is.
Probably somewhere, right?
Until the WBC gave him a ranking. I think I got ranked by the WBC last week.
Did you?
Number
did
one podcasting.
Yeah. Did you slide a little didn't get a sponsorship text, money?
Yeah. I'll take that sanction. I'm surprised I didn't get a... We'll get a tweet from Mauricio. Dan, I am so disappointed in your thoughts on the WBC.
Join the club.
Yeah, please. Like, take time to sit with me at the next fight and I can explain to you how we run our enterprise. Respectfully. He is a respectful guy, give him that.
Oh, absolutely.
He has to... Do you think he realizes how cockamamie some of these decisions are?
I don't think they care, dude. I meant to say this earlier and it just came back to me. I'm consistently surprised at the egos of the non-fighters in this sport.
Same.
From promoters to managers to trainers to governing bodies to you name it. The egos, like they, because it's fight sports, everyone's like a fighter in their mind and they're the boss and the big man on campus. And whatever I say goes and doesn't, you just take it.
There's a lot of that in the sport, like even down to media members. It's like it's very hostile. Yeah,
very hostile. Like, very aggressive.
Everyone's aggressive. Like even the fighters towards media, the media towards the fighters. Like I ran into someone.
Well, fighters, I get. Fighters, I get. Like we get really hostile and aggressive. I get that. Like speaking these of other that, guys,
I saw one of Shakur Stevenson's someone on his team, and this person said, "You're gonna spar Shakur?" Caught me off guard, and they were like, "You know, you get a little spicy on Twitter, Dan." And I said, "Really?
Really?"
I was like, "Man, look at you." I only do it when it's aimed at me. Like I said to this person, Shakur, we have been a big time fan of Shakur's.
Yes.
We've had him on our show.
Yep. Yep.
But this person was not going to say anything bad about their teammate in Shakur. And I was like, well, obviously we're not going to spar now because he's got the Tio fight. So he got out of it.
Well, you and Tio are kind of similar stature wise. You know, you're heavier, but I think height wise, you could step in as one of the rotating sparring partners. You throw you in on the back, throw him in. Listen, we used to do that a lot back in the day. We'd have like when I had to prepare for 12 round fights. It's really hard to find enough sparring partners for those kinds of workouts, especially because you want guys to be, you know, fresh. In shape and fresh, because sloppy guys, you end up getting hurt, you get headbutted, stupid shit like that. You want guys to be sharp. So we would rotate guys through. So we would have 3 or 4 guys for a 12-round session. But by the end, you also don't want guys who are killers. So you would have the smaller guys, you'd have younger guys. Dan. You know, throw in, you got that happy-go-lucky kid in the gym who wants to get in with a world champion. Throw him out on the end.
That's pretty classic.
Well, yeah, we talked about the sparring stories that you were going to spearhead. That would be one of them too, because that happens quite a bit too.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what I'm tipping the scales at. We ate, it was disgusting, the amount of Tex-Mex and brisket. Pinkertons, Barbecue. Yeah.
Pickerton's is awesome. Amazing.
Oh, my. Pickerton's? I said Pinkerton. So, Pickerton's? Good gracious.
So good.
Everyone is so nice, too, in Texas. Like, every waiter, Uber driver, super nice.
I've been telling you about San Antonio for a while. I've been there so many times. I absolutely love it. It's and one of the biggest things that I think people gloss over, everyone talks about the food. The people are super nice. Like, really, I mean, Mexican Americans, Texicans, they're some of the best people around.
Yeah, and then Friday we got done with the weigh-in. I was done with all my content, so we kind of could just lay back a little bit. We found a Mexican spot right on the Riverwalk. Had lunch with Abner Maris and one of his boys.
Love Abner.
Super fun. You know, we're drinking, we're eating all, it was great telling stories, and that was really cool. That's the cool part of this gig, is hanging out with some fight people and doing it in a cool city like San Antonio. All right, that's our episode. What are you gonna say, something?
I was just gonna say that certain personalities in the sport, the guys that you see consistently for long periods of time, the Tim Bradleys, the Abner Marez's, you know, the Dan Canobios, the Chris Elgier, like, they're good dudes, man. Sean Givens, great, like, good people. So we do have a very, our community is very small, but the dickheads don't last. You can't.
Well, fortunately, a lot of the dickheads are sticking around. Like, there are a lot of people I avoid at all costs, but there are a lot of good ones too. Like, yeah, Maris was cool as hell, and you know, just picking his brain and hearing some stories like about, you know, what the party scene is like now in LA. And
Abner's super cool, man. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's great. He's awesome. He's I thought he was really good on the broadcast too. I think he's really comfortable now, because it was definitely an adjustment for him going from fighting to the broadcast.
Well, did you ever hear that story? He told me that story about how, like, he got into fighting, like, into broadcasting, and it was like really like on a whim. Like, he really got thrown in more so than other fighters. I had an idea that I was going to be doing this, and I worked a lot of local shows. He was like right on a huge telecast on Showtime, like first go.
Right, because he wanted to keep fighting. He was supposed to fight Tank, and then he had the eye injury.
Yes. Yep. We spoke to him about that as well.
Yeah. Good guy. All right, everyone. We'll be back later on in the week. Maybe we'll drum up a voicemail episode. I'm heading out to Florida on Friday to call a Box Labs fight in Orlando. And then from Orlando, I'm driving to Miami for the Jake Paul Joshua Extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
So I'll be in Florida for 9 days, bro.
And I will be in Aruba.
Oh, wow. That's right. We got to figure out what we're going to do. I think you should just take the time off, bro.
Taking a vacation.
Should we do a guest co-host?
Yeah. Why don't you do Paulie?
God. Like you said in the chat, Paulie's expensive. I don't know if I can afford Paulie.
Yeah.
Paulie, yeah, I would think maybe Brian Campbell, maybe Sean Zatel. Oh,
BC. BC's always a good one.
Maybe Sean's find a great fighter. I want you to
I was on Morning Combat
vacation
last week.
I watched
with BC and Luke Thomas. That was a fun one. Like those guys.
When are you leaving for that trip?
Saturday morning.
Oh, damn. All right.
Quick trip. I'll be back on Thursday working a fight. I need to
You've had a long couple of months. I know it's been fun, but it's been a long month of traveling. Chris has been grinding, everybody.
Yeah.
Grinding.
Yeah, Chris is working lots of jobs, bringing home lots of checks. Now I need to put my feet in the sand.
Chris cashing checks Algeri.
All the checks. Chris, all the checks, Algeri.
I love that. All right, everyone. We'll see you later on in the week. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs since you have a job. Chris, cash and checks, Algeri.